Welcome to Epiphany with communications evangelist Vanessa Denha-Garmo, encouraging listeners to connect, collaborate, and communicate with the faith community. Here's your host, Vanessa Denha-Garmo.
Good Sunday. Happy 4th of July. I'm Vanessa here. Wonderful to talk with all of you and to be here with you on our Independence Day. We have a wonderful show. Two guests. Teresa Tomeo is joining us this afternoon, for two segments. We'll be talking about Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. He died at the age of 24. We'll talk about his life and, of course, the fact that Italy is opening up. And then Rob Muse is joining us from the American Freedom Law Center about our independence and this 4th of July, what it means to us, and how we can continue to fight for our freedoms in this wonderful country of ours, the great USA. Stay with us, everyone. We'll be right back after the break. Today is not just 4th of July, it is the feast day of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. To talk with us about that is our own Teresa Tomeo, media expert, motivational speaker, best-selling author, syndicated Catholic talk show host of Catholic Connection, heard right here on Ave Maria Radio, and host of The Catholic View for Women. She's also the founder of Tease Italy, your one-stop shopping on all things Italia. T, how are you today?
I am great, and what a great blessed to talk about. One of my favorites. I actually have a wonderful picture in my home studio and a quote from his, which I'll share with you before the end of the program. But he was so awesome. He's a great patron for youth. He was actually, I think, and still may be, the patron for World Youth Day. He is from Torino, a beautiful, beautiful city, major city in northern Italy. But what a great witness for all of us.
We know that Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati was beatified in 1990 by St. Pope John Paul II, another one of your favorites, and named the man of the eight Beatitudes. And he teaches us that holiness is possible for everyone. What can you share with us about that?
Well, he had a strong dedication to the poor. He was born in a very well-to-do family. His father, Alfredo, was the founder and director of the newspaper La Stampa, so he was in a very high-end family in terms of they were, you know, traveling and meeting with the elites and people of the world and, you know, leaders and politicians and others. And he was very influenced, the family was, in politics and holding different positions in Italian government. This is his father, and also serving as an ambassador to Germany. So he grew up in a very cultural setting, in a very sophisticated setting, and yet he was so simple in terms that he recognized the needs of people. And despite his upbringing and the family success, he was drawn to the poor. And he would do whatever he could for the poor, and he was doing so much behind the scenes and a lot of people didn't know. For example, he would go into the neighborhoods, he would literally give them the clothes off his back if someone needed a coat, if someone needed a shirt. He would help feed the poor, and he was very dedicated to the Eucharist. So he just had a heart for the poor, and at the same time, he loved all of his friends. He loved to ski, he loved to hike, and there's great pictures of him in the mountains, and he was a practical jokester, so he had a great sense of humor. And I think he's such a great example for young people and for all of us because he's so well balanced. While he loved the Lord so much and loved the Eucharist and always talked about promoting dedication to the Eucharist and helping people understand the body, blood, soul, and divinity, he also liked to have fun, and he did. And that's where that balance comes in, where you can live life joyfully as a faithful Catholic.
Yeah, and you know what? He lived such a wonderful and humble life, but yeah,
right.
He looked like a movie star.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. He was very attractive and very Italian with the dark hair and the dark eyes, but just a very amazing young man, and died in his 20s. He was so young.
Wow.
And when he died, his funeral, so many people came to his funeral. His family was stunned. They had no idea. Thousands came. I mean, they were lining the streets. It was pretty incredible.
What a testimony to his life to have such an impact at such a young age. It just shows us that we could, too, make a mark in this world.
And the interesting thing is that he was very outspoken about his being against a lot of things that were happening in the government at the time in Italy. He was strongly anti-fascist, and he didn't hide his political views. But he had actually a preoccupation, as the website FrassatiUSA.org says, to the poor. Listen to this. They say, on the eve of his death, with a paralyzed hand, he scribbled a message to a friend asking him to take the medicine needed for injections to be given to a poor sick man whom he had been visiting. His funeral, they say, was a triumph. The streets of every city were lined with a multitude of mourners who were unknown to his family, the poor, the needy, whom he had served unselfishly for 7 years. Many of these people, in turn, were surprised to learn that the saintly young man they knew had actually been the heir of the influential Frassati family. So here he was doing what he felt called to do as a Catholic Christian, but never letting anyone know about his family, the money, and the prestige.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. I love one of his quotes here on his website, T. He says, "Every one of you knows that the foundation of our religion is charity."
Mm-hmm.
And it's giving back.
Yep. And how many of us see what's going on in terms of a loss of charity, in terms of the way we treat each other? You and I were talking about this just recently on Catholic Connection in the news segment, how we attack people. And I know you did one of your evangelical moments that you do. I heard it. It was beautiful.
Christian communication message.
Exactly, in terms of the way we speak to each other and how we have to be more charitable.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many different ways to offer charity, not just with monetary things, but our love, how we talk to each other, how we respect each other, how we listen to each other. We talked about that on your show the other day, T, and in the news, if we lack the ability to just listen to each other.
I know. It drives me crazy. Absolutely drives me crazy.
St. Pope John Paul II said he left this world, talking about Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, he left this world rather young, but he made a mark upon our entire century and not only on our country. What an incredible statement. What can we learn? And, you know, today we talked to you how our children don't have the best role models. What a great role model for youth today, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I pulled up. I love getting quotes from the saints, and I found a website that has all these great quotes from him. Listen to this. He said, "Foolish is he who follows the pleasures of this world, because they are always fleeting and bring much pain. The only true pleasure is that which comes to us through faith." And then this, "A Catholic cannot help but be happy. Sadness should be banished from their souls. Suffering is not sadness, which is the worst disease. The disease is almost always caused by atheism. But the end for which we are created guided us along life's pathway, which may be strewn with thorns, but it's not sad. It's happy, even though we're suffering."
Yeah. That's so powerful.
And he was so young.
So young. And made such a difference in such a short time.
Yeah.
And just like the other young Italian man who recently was named Blessed, Carlos.
Carlos Acutis.
Acutis, who you talk about on your show all the time.
Mm-hmm.
What both of them are great role models for our children today. And T, you love, as you mentioned, quoting saints. You talk about saints a lot. I love learning about the saints as well. What really motivates you? How do they inspire you? And what would you say to our listeners about reading about saints if they haven't done so already?
Well, I think what inspires me the most is that they've all been there, done that, and bought the proverbial T-shirt in terms of everything we're going through in life.
So
and just in general, whether it's our personal lives, whether it's physical sickness. But I think for right now, why they really inspire me is that the problems that we're having in the church and the concerns that people have about the lack of catechesis, problems with leadership, issues that are going on. We've had, you know, we're punch drunk in the Catholic Church right now, let's face it. The turn of the century, the 21st century, boom, we get hit with this huge abuse crisis. It just explodes, right? And then we get to the point where they start addressing it. We set up the systems that are hopefully dealing with it. And then, you know, we find out, oh my gosh, we dealt with it, but not as well as we should have because the McCarrick scandal breaks, okay? So then 2 years after that, what do we have? We have COVID. The churches are shut down. People are feeling abandoned. Not everyone is agreeing with the way the church handled this, that, or the other thing. And now we have, of course, the election, and there's a division, and now we have division over the vaccine. I mean, all these things that are happening, we think they are new to us. But if you read the lives of the saints, even though the circumstances may be not identical, they are similar. If you look at St. Teresa of Avila, if you look at St. Catherine of Siena, for example, if you look at Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, a lot of the issues in terms of a lack of faith that were going on in Europe at the time are similar to what we're experiencing now. For St. Teresa of Avila and St. Catherine of Siena, persecution of the faithful in the church was going on, where she was being questioned, St. Teresa of Avila. St. Catherine of Siena was hauled into a court, so to speak, of church leaders and questioned about, you know, her faith and what she was doing in terms of to evangelize. And St. Catherine of Siena dealt specifically with a plague and also dealt with church leaders who were not willing to stand their ground and do what they needed to do. So they have been through the mill in terms of everything that we're going through right now. Even if we weren't facing the problems we have in the church and in the world, personal struggles that they each had in terms of attacks and suffering. So many of the saints, all of the saints have gone through a lot of suffering, and we can identify with them and learn how to not only remain faithful, but to use that suffering to make a difference. And this is what I love about the saints, because they're real. We tend to keep them up on the shelves. I know I did for years. Take them down. Read about their lives. Get into their daily life. What did they do? How did they live? What did they eat? Where did they go? You will identify with them so closely, it'll make an entirely different perspective.
You know, sometimes, T, too, I truly believe that we think we call on the saints. I think sometimes the saints call on us. They call to us.
Mm-hmm.
I felt for the last few years that Blessed Solanus Casey has just, like, popping up in my life. It was just, like, weird things happening. Like, people would mention going to his healing masses on Wednesday. My niece started singing there. And then his name would kept popping up around my life. And someone said, oh, someone would hand me a prayer card or speak to me. And then one day I was coming home, and I opened my garage door, and something fell from the, like, the top of the refrigerator, and it was another Blessed Solanus Casey card. I'm like, what? Where did this come from? I mean, and it was just odd things. And so sometimes I think we just have to be in tune that the saints are calling us, saying, listen, talk to me. I'll pray for you. Or, you know, learn about me. See what I have done, you know, and I can help you. And you make such a good point. We can learn so much from them and relate to how they live their life. I think what he taught me the most, T, is humility.
Mm-hmm.
We're so hard on ourselves. Like, I'm not perfect. I'm not great. I'm not the best talk show host. I'm not the best coach. I'm not the best communication strategist. And look at the humility of Blessed Solanus Casey. It's unbelievable.
Right, the doorman, right? And they put him at the door, and yet all the people that saw him, how many people he changed and lives he's changed and miracles, and now he's, you know, beatified and could be, God willing, very soon a saint. It's interesting you mention that about, because they do want to get our attention. I had an experience when I was down in New Orleans, and these are God-sidents that I talk about and you talk about in my book, Listening for God. But I was with some friends. They came to see me while I was speaking. They live in that area. And one of them is Kitty Cleveland, and she's an amazing singer, songwriter, and artist, and she's just powerful Catholic speaker as well, but she wanted to pray over me because I was sharing with her some of the nonsense that's going on and division in the church and some of the attacks that we're under at Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. And she was praying over me, and she said, oh, St. Teresa of Avila, she's all over this, and which I knew because I have a very strong relationship with her. But she goes, then she says, St. Joan of Arc is also on the front lines for you. She's really there battling for you. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. That's my home parish. I grew up in St. Joan.
Oh.
But I never really took the time to get to know St. Joan of Arc that well. I know her story, but I'm thinking, wow, I could have had a V8. Where have I been all these years? So I think she's trying to get my attention, St. Joan of Arc. So
that's a great story. I love that, T.
Yeah.
We're talking with our own Ave Maria Radio morning host with Catholic Connection on EWTN, Teresa Tamio, media expert, motivational speaker, bestselling author, author of the latest book, Listening for God, which I have been honored to pen my own little story in there as well. And you're also the founder of Tease Italy. We're talking about all things Italia with Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati as well. T, it's so wonderful that Italy and Europe is finally opening up. We're moving past COVID. Speak to our listeners about that.
Wow, it's so incredible. What's happening right now is that they're reducing all the, they're removing actually all the restrictions, pretty much all of them, to get into Italy now. When I went with our team from corporate travel just to kind of, you know, check things out in the beginning of June, we had to have a COVID test before we left, a COVID test then when we landed in New York City at JFK before we took our flight over to Rome. We had to do one when we landed and then one when we came back in Italy. So we had four COVID tests that we had to do. And that was fine. It wasn't that difficult. It was just a matter of making some more time for yourself. But no big deal. Happy to do that. They didn't require vaccination. That's not a requirement. But now there are even fewer requirements. They're not doing the COVID-free flights anymore. What they're doing is all you need is one of the following. Not all, just one. And I mean, you could bring more than one, but you need a negative COVID test. Or if you've been vaccinated, a vaccination card, but vaccination is not required. Or proof, if you've had COVID, that you've recovered in the last 6 months. Or you can get a European Green Pass, but that's more for people who are living and spending a lot of time over in Europe. So that is awesome. And you don't necessarily have to take a test when you're on. That's probably going to change. You still do, as of today, have to take a test on the way back. But even so, that will be one test versus how many, right, that we had to do before. So they're easing up because they're opening, and also because Italy is very, very serious about not only bringing their country back, but also making sure that they're very safe. So they're very high on the vaccination there. They're very high on sanitary conditions. I mean, the hotels are always very clean, but it was over the top this time, and they were making an effort to really try to be sanitary. And even though they're not requiring masks anymore, many of the staff members in the restaurants and also in the hotels are still wearing them just for their own safety and to let the people at the hotels and at restaurants and want know that they're trying to go the extra mile. So very good news, and we just got back. We took a team there, and we had a fabulous time. And once you're there, you don't have to wear the mask. Staff people, kind of like here, if it's optional, yeah. if the restaurants or if the hotels want to wear them, they can. But everything is open, and V, the important thing about going right now, I would say just do it quickly if Italy is on your bucket list, the crowds will be minimal, and that is so important. It just affects your whole experience, and many people will go, and let's say they'll vacation in a beach town or a pretty small town and end their trip in Rome, and they want to go see, of course, the Vatican Museums, Borghese Gardens, whatever, all the great sites, and they end up running into massive crowds, and it just taints their whole experience because it's so...
It happened to me on my honeymoon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, did it?
Yeah. Big crowds in the Vatican.
But it's not like that right now. And I think it'll be a while before it gets that crazy, but I would say it's not going to take that long. I would say within the next 6 months to a year, if you go before the end of the year, I think you'll still be in pretty good shape. You start going next year, you're going to start seeing crowds again. So if it's on your bucket list, get there, and it's a great time to go. Perfect time to go.
And T, for people listening who don't know anything about traveling in Italy, they can consult with you.
So
tell us about T's Italy.
Well, it's interesting. I started it right before, the summer of 2019, so 2 years ago. I was getting so many requests for itineraries, help with itineraries, information, background, tips, because I have been to Italy so often for personal reasons, because Dominic and I are of Italian heritage and we love it there, and also for the faith and for work because of conferences and work related to Ave Maria and EWTN. I ended up going now over probably close to 60 times now I've been to Italy.
Wow.
And probably Rome.
Wow.
Even more than that. And so I've learned a lot, and I've taken notes, and I've kept records of the hotels and where I've stayed and what I've done, and then of course I've led many pilgrimages as well. And in speaking with some of my friends in the travel industry, I was telling them about how I was sending information, detailed emails, and they said, you know what? What you have is more experience than most travel agents because you've concentrated on Italy. They said this is really good information. Think about starting a consulting service. So I thought, okay, how is that going to work? I don't want to do bookings. I don't want to get into handling credit cards or anything like that and, booking hotels and airfare for people. So what we do is we have TravelItalyExpert.com, and if you're going to Italy and you want insider tips, you want advice, you want how to plan an itinerary, where to go, how much to do, how much time, where to play, shop, eat, and pray, as I always say in the ads that we do, then you go to the homepage at TravelItalyExpert.com and you fill out the questionnaire. And it's an intake form. When do you want to go? How many people? Where do you want to go? Is it a special occasion? Any other special requests that you have? So then you schedule an appointment with me through Calendly. We have the whole thing set up. And, I charge a minimum fee. And included in that fee is once we're done, in 2 or 3 days, we will send you, after we go over everything and look at the areas you're going to, a very detailed list, hotels, restaurants, suggested tours, drivers, my inside tips, my articles, my videos, and the last three people with whom we've consulted, their documents, which we'll send you in both PDF and a Word document, and then you can download it on your phone or print it up, however you want to carry it. Two of them ended up being 40 pages long.
Wow.
Yeah, with all the information.
So you're really tailoring it towards
It's not cookie cutter.
It's not like, That's
no,
great.
No, because everybody's needs are different. For example, I just consulted with a family who's bringing 20 people.
Wow.
Woman is celebrating her 50th anniversary, and she's bringing her kids and her grandkids. Now, they want to go to Rome and the Amalfi Coast, which is fine, but you have to tailor make it because you have to think about the situation. Okay, she has got to move around, and the children, the grandchildren, are ages 4 to 16. So then you have all these different needs, right? You have needs for the couple celebrating their anniversary. You have needs for their children, the parents of the kids. You have needs for the children who are going to be looking for different activities. So then we get into our, okay, let's talk about family activities mode. What can you do with the kids? You can go to a pizza class. The kids can go they have a pizza class. You can go to a gelato making class. You can take them to the Colosseum. Now offers a special, I think they call it the gladiators class, where they dress the little boys up in the gladiators and talk about what the gladiators used to do. So there's all these different specialized items that people may not be aware of. Plus, where do you stay with 20 people? Do you rent a villa? Do you go to a hotel? So you have to talk to them about, okay, what are you looking for? Now, I've already, before I meet with the people, I do research. They want to go here. They want to go there. what is that going to entail? And then I also can give them information because I have a driver that I work with, and he is with a company that has all different size vehicles. And he's become my personal driver. I've used him so much, and he's fantastic. So, you know, but these are the kind of things. Navigating Italy is really a challenge. It's not like going in the United States where you can cap on Route 66 or I-75 and bada boom, bada bing, you're there, right?
Yeah.
Because of the way Italy is literally built, it's not like you can get to point A and point B, you know, and you have to think about where you're staying. Are you staying on the beach? Are you staying inland? Are you staying in a little town? It, you know, it sounds very romantic to stay along the Amalfi Coast, but do you realize that the Amalfi Drive is extremely treacherous? And are you going to be way, way up in the mountains where you have to walk 20 minutes to even get into town to get a cab or get a bus? So those are kind of things that I can help people with because of the area. And you don't know that because it's so overwhelming and there's so much to see. So these are very practical tips that are going to save you money and save you time and make the most out of your vacation.
That's Tease Italy. T, what's the website for that again?
TravelItalyExpert.com.
And you know what's great about Italy opening up the way that it is, the way you explained it to us, is that Italy, as we know, was hit very hard by COVID and closed down for a long period of time. Look how much they're quickly recovering and getting back to normal. This is all good news.
It is. And the thing that's so exciting is when you go to Italy, and you know because you've been there, the people are so warm and welcoming.
They are.
But
I
now
love
there's
Italy.
there's even and I always said this that the Italians and the Chaldeans are like identical. I mean seriously, we're like so much alike
we
in terms
a different
of
language. Yeah,
exactly. Food and we're so friendly and you see and you do the kissing on the two cheeks. I mean that's just that's how we were brought up.
Yeah.
But there is a level V that wasn't there before, where I think sometimes in the bigger cities, even though they were always great and very cordial. You know, they could get a little bit annoyed at the crowds and everything, get a little bit, you know, roll their eyes a little bit in Rome. But now it's like they rolling out the red carpet. And there's so many special things that they're willing to do for you because they realize, oh, boy, this is a gift. We need our people back. And it's just, it's over the, it's always over the top, but it's over the top to the nth degree now. It's just so much fun. It's such a great place to go.
So, T, for people listening, and they can call and consult you on where to go, but if they have never, ever been to Italy, what is the first must-go-see? I mean, is it Rome? Is it Florence? Is it Venice? I mean, where would you start? Because you've been
I would
so
start
times,
in Rome.
But,
I would start in Rome, especially if you're Catholic. If you're Catholic, I would definitely start in Rome. I would start in Rome, period, because it's the epicenter, and there's so much to see. And many people, even if they're not of any particular faith, they still want to see the Vatican and the museums because they're so beautiful with all the art. And the Sistine Chapel itself is still amazing. So I think start there. And then, of course, you've got the Borghese Gardens. You've got other museums. And you've got you know, towns around Italy that are very pretty. And then there's just so much to do. There's so much, you know, culture in Italy with the food and the Trastevere region. So I would start there. And then if you – and first of all, I think, number one, start in Rome. But number two, I think the most important thing is to give yourself plenty of time. I can't tell you how many people I have talked off the ledge in terms of, no, you can't see Rome, Venice, Florence, the Amalfi Coast, and Cinque Terre, and Puglia in a week. It's just not going to happen unless you don't want to sleep.
So what realistically, T, is it like really a two-week trip? I mean, that you pick like three or four cities in 2 weeks?
I wouldn't do anything less than 10 days, only because you've got to consider flying overseas.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Even if you can get a first-class seat or in Comfort Plus on Delta, it's still a lot. You know, it's very busy traveling. Usually you have to make a connection somewhere unless you're living in a big city where they have direct flights. So you want to give yourself a day on either end for travel. So you have 10, that brings it down technically to 8. So that's why if you can do 2 full weeks, it is well worth it. It is well worth it, and you will so appreciate when you get there. So I think 2 weeks is realistic. You can push it at 10 days, but I would never do anything less than 10 days, because even if you're just going to Rome. Because you think about it, and once you get there, you're like, oh, she was right. I should have stayed longer.
So
you need the time.
Absolutely. So I have to just tell our listeners, you recommended our honeymoon to Ronnie and I, the trip we took to on our honeymoon. We still say that by far was the best trip we have ever taken.
Good, I'm glad.
It was so awesome. But I have to tell you something fun. So T recommended a Mediterranean cruise, and it did include going to Italy, and we flew into Spain. And I wish I had flown to Spain a couple days even earlier to spend more time, because I flew in, just to your point, T, about being jet-lagged and you're tired. We got into Spain at like, I don't know, 10 o'clock in the morning. We landed in Spain, okay, because the way our flight was. And we were so exhausted. And so we went to the hotel. We're like, oh, let's just take a nap. We'll just chill out for a while, and we'll get up and go sightsee and go out to eat and whatever. We woke up at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
We were exhausted. I was like, oh, there goes the day here in Spain.
Right, right.
You know.
So you try to stay awake if you can, or sleep on the plane a little bit, to just to get that over that edge, and so then you'll be back to normal the next day when you get your, so you can get a full 8 hours sleep at night. Otherwise, your sleep is going to be all messed up, which I'm sure you found out. Yeah, that first.
Yeah, day. And T, when you do go parts of Italy, do you also share with the people that you're working with T's Italy on the saints in those cities, like the in certain areas? You know,
oh yeah, oh yeah. We actually
Francis
the other thing,
CC or,
yeah, because a lot of people when they write us, and we're getting many of our consultations through EW10 and Ave Maria Radio, they're interested in particular saints and they want to learn about them, and so we will send them to the particular regions and tell them the churches that are available. Also, we also let them know about Eucharistic miracles in various areas. Many people whiz by Orvieto, which is about 2 hours north of Rome. They pass by it because it's on the main, you can see it from the main road, and they don't even stop. And Eucharist and Orvieto has one of the most important Eucharistic miracles. So they miss that. Also on the other side, Adriatic, they also, when they want to go down to Puglia, they forget about stopping in Lanciano, which is another Eucharistic miracle. So there are all these little things that you know, or Montepello in Abruzzo, which is the face cloth of Christ. So there's all these things that they may not know about that we say, okay, have you thought about doing this? Have you thought about doing this? You can do it. It's on the way. I didn't know that. So, yeah. And also, I think helping people understand that what they see out there and what they're sold in movies like Under the Tuscan Sun, to give them a little bit dose of reality. For me, I always try to take them away from the touristy spots. Like when everybody thinks of the Amalfi Coast, they think of Positano and Capri. Two beautiful places, but I would not stay there. I would stay, if you want to stay in the Amalfi Coast, and I'm very open about this. I've said it on the air and I say it to all my clients. My favorite spot on the Amalfi Coast is a little town called Priano. It sits in between Positano to the north and Amalfi on the south. But yet what you get there is a real slice of Italian life. But it also has your 4- and 5-star hotels, your great restaurants, your beaches. And it's only a 5-minute bus ride from Positano. So you can hop on the bus, shop till your heart's content in Positano, but then get back and go to this beautiful little town with beautiful village and lovely families and a beautiful church and... Yeah, just get a slice of life of the real Italy. And Capri is beautiful, but I say go to Capri, avoid the crowds, take the ski lift up Mount Solero, and go up and see the famous rocks, the Ferlinghini Rocks, and then have a drink up there, come back down, walk around a little bit in Anna Capri, and then take the boat and get back to the mainland. If you want to go to an island and stay, you should stay on Ischia, which Deacon Dom and I did 2 years ago, which is a new favorite spot of mine, also along the Amalfi Coast, but a little bit closer to Naples and Sorrento, so a little bit north. But phenomenal island, much bigger, much less commercial than Capri. So when you see something out there and it sounds, it looks beautiful, make sure that you're checking and double-checking, because there's a lot of rip-off stuff out there that people have to be careful of. So what I try to do is say, okay, what do you want? Are you into tourism? Are you into thousands of people in shops and selling you everything under the sun? Or do you want a real life experience in Italy, but at the same time enjoying the beauty? So this is what's different about T's Italy. I'm not going to try to sell you the big touristy spots. I'm going to give you places to go. See, you get to see all the big sites, but I'm going to give you the inside track and where I hang out in Italy.
T, we got to take a break and come back and continue this conversation here on Epiphany. We're continuing our conversation here on Epiphany with Teresa Tomeo, media expert, motivational speaker, best-selling author, host of the syndicated Catholic talk show, host heard right here on Ave Maria Radio in the Morning, Catholic Connection, and the Catholic View for Women. She's the founder of T's Italy, which we've been talking about here on Epiphany, your one-stop shop on all things Italia. It is also the 4th of July and the feast day of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. T, so much going on in Italy, and Melissa, our producer here on Epiphany, wanted to know if you hiked a certain area, and I don't have it in front of me, but I think
yes.
She asked you, so tell me about that hike and tell our listeners.
Melissa is very wise. That's a beautiful area of Italy. It's on the Ligurian coast, and it's known as Cinque Terre, or the five lands of five earths, and it's just, well, for me, every area of Italy is like drop-dead stinking gorgeous, but this one looks like it's fake because it's so pretty.
It's called the Via dell'Amore?
Yeah, that's at the Walk of Love. Yeah, and you start it, what you do is it's that particular area of the hike is very short, and it's a little tunnel you go through, and everybody writes little hearts and everything. So, of course, we were there for our anniversary. I think it was our 20th or 25th anniversary. Yeah, because they were coming up on 38 years. That was 13 years ago. And we went down to that particular town where that's located. And then you can walk either up or down. We were, as I was telling Melissa during the break, we were up at the top. We were staying north of the Cinque Terre on the Ligurian coast near Portofino in a beautiful town called Rapallo. So we took the train south, all the way south, and then in the morning, and then walked our way back up. And we started at that section known as the Way of Love. And it's a little short little section of the actual hike, which the entire hike is almost 8 miles long. But what's nice is it's not that rough. It's pretty much all on one plane once you, and then you get a ticket because it's a national park. But you walk through all the towns. Now, for Cinque Terre, you can't drive a car there because of the way it's situated in the water. You either take a boat or you take the train, as we did, and then you walk from town to town. But it is absolutely spectacular, and there are five different areas, five little cities, so to speak, villages, and they're just breathtaking, and the hike is very famous. But it's a great thing to do in northern Italy.
So, T, you also have a story in your book, Listening for God, that has to do with the train station.
Yes, in that location in Cinque Terre. Okay. As a matter of fact, when we were stopping at the end of our day, we started probably about 10, 11 o'clock and took our time. You know, we went into the shops and maybe had a glass of wine or went into a little place, bought some cheese and some bread and sat down. So we didn't, like, rush the hike. We wanted to enjoy it all. And so we had made reservations at a location, a waterfront restaurant, for our anniversary, because that was the day of our anniversary, at the town of Vernazza. So if you're starting from the bottom of Cinque Terre, Vernazza would be the fourth town before you get the end of the five little villages. And so we got there, and we were so excited, and we had this beautiful dinner. And we were so proud of ourselves because we had navigated everything so well, yada, yada, yada. We had our train tickets, and we knew we had to get back on the train by no later than like 9:30, 10 o'clock. So we were fine. We got there. We had our dinner, wonderful dinner on the water, went back up to the train station. We get on the train, and everything is going great. We're like, we're so hip travelers. We're so cool. We're so all that in the bag of chips. Then all of a sudden, V, the train just stops. Just stops at this remote station in the middle of nowhere. And the guy says, andiamo, andiamo, gets everybody off the train. And we're like, we have our tickets. We're supposed to be in Rapallo. Just shooing us off the train. And it's complete darkness, except for like one or two lights that were at the station. The actual office was shut down. Everybody empties out on the train, and the platform is like completely empty with people. There's nobody there. And I said to Dominic, I said, what in the world happened? He says, I don't know, but we better think fast. And so we're seeing if we can get a phone signal to maybe see if we can call and look for a local hotel or do something, because literally there was one little bench on this platform, and we thought, well, I guess we're just going to have to sleep here or wait till the next train comes. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, about 10, 50 feet away, I see a man, a very distinguished gentleman, holding his, like, cap under his arm. He looked like he was a police officer. He had a white shirt on, navy blue pants, and he had, like, some, looked like epaulets, you know, on his sleeves, like he was some sort of an officer or something. And he said to us in very clear English, he spoke Italian, obviously, with an accent, but very, very clear English, okay, you're going to Rapallo. You need to get back on the train and wait about 15 minutes. And I said to myself, it was you're trying to comprehend, okay, where did he come from? How does he know we're going to Rapallo? Because we were 10 to 15 feet away, mm-hmm. and we weren't, you know, raising our voices or anything. It was just a quiet conversation. And he said, you're going to Rapallo, right? And I said, yes. And he says, just get back on the train. In about 15 minutes, it'll start up and it'll go back. And I said, but we were just kicked off. And he says, you know, Senora, just trust me on this. You'll be fine. Get on the train. I said, okay, he must know something we don't. So the train doors were still open, but again, nobody was around. So we got back on the train, and we sat there. And as I was stepping onto the train off of the platform, I turned to thank him, and he disappeared. There were no footsteps. There was no noise as if someone was leaving. I literally walked by him, and then I went to turn to thank him, V, and he was gone. And there was no way that he could have disappeared like that, because the platform was so small, and he had to walk away to get off the platform and go down this little hill or this little mountain area. Mm-hmm. He just disappeared as quickly as he showed up. And later on, I asked an expert from EWTN, a priest who writes about angels, and he said definitely that this is what happens sometimes. This is how they appear to us on Earth. And so in the book, Listening for God, I call it the angel at the train station. So,
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
But that was
story.
In that area of Italy, because Cinque Terre, the towns are built into the side of the mountain, so the train station is above that. and there really isn't anything else around.
Yeah.
So it's like, where are we going to go? So it's not like we were in a busy area where people normally get on and off. It was a very remote location.
Yeah. Speaking of him speaking clear English, and if he was an angel, that makes sense, you know, because he knows you speak English. But in general, can you get away with traveling Italy, T, and not knowing the language?
Yes, and now more so than before. Now, in the big cities, they all speak English. And in the country, they teach it in grade school, too, so it's pretty common. And the interesting thing is they want to learn English because they think the world of America. Everyone wants to come over to the United States. I always tease them and say, okay, we'll have a house trade. I'll come live here. You come and live in my house for a couple of years. But you can. They do appreciate it if you try to say at least, you know, grazie for thank you or prego for please, por favore. Buona notte, buona sera. And when I give my documents, when I give the summary for our clients, we have a whole list of Italian phrases.
Oh, so it's just asking, yeah. You give them a list of common phrases.
Yes, common phrases, yep. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Yep. Now, in terms of food in Italy, because you talk about faith, food, and prayer, what is your little slogan, your marketing slogan?
We give people information on, the best information on where to play, shop, eat, and pray.
Okay. So let's talk about eating.
Okay.
Italians and Chaldeans like to eat, okay? So one thing I learned in Italy that I did not know is that pasta is not a main dish.
No, it's not.
I did not know that till I got there. I'm like, oh, it's a side dish.
It's a side dish or it's a secondo. It could be the second dish. It could be like you have an appetizer, then you have a pasta, then you have your meat, then you have usually like your vegetables, you know, or something afterwards, like maybe some fruit. Yeah.
So what else do we need to know about food in Italy? Do you talk to your clients about where to eat and all
these
places?
I have a whole list of restaurants in all the different areas, whether it's the Amalfi Coast, whether it's Florence, whether it's Rome, neighborhoods, favorite places, stores you can shop and take things home if you have an apartment, if you're renting an apartment. Yeah, I have it all. My best advice is you have to avoid the places that are handing out the menus on the street corners. And you have to avoid the menus that think they're trying to appeal to Americans by having spaghetti and meatballs. Spaghetti and meatballs is also not an Italian dish. That is a dish that was created from Italian immigrants who came over from Italy, and when they started to make some money, because meat wasn't very common, especially in the South, where the areas were very poor, when they started to make some money and could afford meat, they decided to combine the both and make, you know, the spaghetti and meatballs. Now, meatballs, polpetti, are served in Italy either as an appetizer or as a main course, but not with pasta. And they can come in fish, with fish. They can be made of pork. They can be made of meat.
Oh.
So you will see them on the menu, and they're called polpetti.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's something else to keep in mind.
So another thing that I learned when I was in Italy, that cannoli is not common all over Italy. I got it in Sicily, but you don't get it in all parts of Italy.
Sicily is where they originated from.
Mm-hmm.
You will also find them in southern parts of Italy. For example, you'll find them in Puglia, which is on the Adriatic. You'll also more commonly find them in Calabria, where my father was from, which is very south near Sicily. But yes, that is a Sicilian dish, and they make the absolute best, and I was there in Sicily also. And they're just to die for.
Yeah,
and
they were unbelievable.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah, we had them in Sicily. They were so good.
Mm-hmm.
So, T, in terms of, traveling, and you say things are opening up, you also go on other pilgrimages. I know you do T's Italy, but you do a lot of pilgrimages with Steve Ray and John Hale. We know that the Holy Land is not opening as much as Europe. Can you speak just a little bit to
Yeah, the Holy Land is right now, Israel is really very restricted. They have excessive rules and regulations in terms of the different types of testing. I'm not sure what it is as of this day on July 4th, but the last 2 weeks it's been even more restrictive than other parts of Europe. In addition to testing, all kinds of testing before you have to go, they want you to do a testing that could take hours in the Tel Aviv airport when you fly in. So I'm not sure if they're going to be or when, but they should be, I would hope, reducing some of those restrictions. Or my concern there is the Holy Land, especially Christians in the Holy Land, are going to be severely impacted by this lack of tourism, because that's how they survive. And the number of Christians continue to dwindle in the Holy Land, especially in Bethlehem and those areas where many Christians live. And my heart is breaking because I'm very, very concerned. So that's the latest I know. It's still pretty much shut down to tourists, unless you're going to be willing to go through this excessive amount of testing, which the last I heard included a blood test when you land in Israel, making it extremely expensive and excessively time-consuming. And I think they're doing it to turn people away and to kind of like avoid tourism for now. So I think if people are looking to do a pilgrimage and they still have the Holy Land on their bucket list, they might want to think about going to Italy first, because I always say if you're going to do, as a Catholic, you need to go to both the Holy Land and to Rome. You could do either one first, whatever is your preference. But for now, maybe get Rome off your bucket list, and then maybe next year, God willing, go back to the Holy Land.
You have a pilgrimage coming up in Italy, right?
I have actually three. One next year with Steve Ray, but the two that are coming up in October, well, one in October, one in November, I'm glad you asked me. This couples trip that we do, every other year we do Roman Holiday for couples based on my favorite movie, Roman Holiday, with Gregory Peck and Audrey Hepburn. So I just think it's just a fabulous movie, and it's a lot of fun. But anyway, so we're doing Rome, Assisi, Orvieto, and Florence. And then we're also going to be having a wine tasting. We're going to be having an olive oil tasting. We're going to be spending some time in the beautiful Tuscan town, City of the Towers, in San Gimignano. We're going to learn about St. Catherine of Siena. We're going to go to we're going to be based in Florence and just tour all over Tuscany and learn all about that area, which is so, so beautiful. You talk about under the Tuscan sun and steroids, that's it, that area. And then we're going to be having, as we head back, after we do all these amazing things, and we're also spending two nights in Assisi, so you're getting both Tuscany and you're getting Umbria, which is a beautiful area. You're also going to be getting a taste of Orvieto as we travel down, because we're going to be having a wine tasting and a beautiful farewell lunch before we get to Rome. And we'll have a full night in Rome, but then we're also doing a special extension. So that's for the couples trip. And throughout that trip, each day, Dominic and I provide little sayings and scripture verses and thoughts for the day for couples and a reflection question that they're to do on their own. They don't have to share. We share our reversion story and our marriage healing story. We have Mass every day, and then we also give you, which I think is really crucial for couples, we also give you alone time. But if you're going to go off on your own, you want to know where to eat, fear not, we'll have suggestions on where to dine and where to shop.
So how do people register for that, T?
We have everything on both the pilgrimage page for AveMariaRadio.net, but then also on my page, both TravelItalyExpert.com, and TeresaTomeo.com. TeresaTomeo.com, it's under the events section. So very easy to find.
You're also part of the couples cruise as well, coming up in January.
The couples cruise coming up in January. And then I wanted to mention also the other pilgrimage to Italy is in November with Kelly Walquist, Wine and Shrine. Wine and Shrine, and WINE is an acronym for Women in the New Evangelization. And we're going again to Tuscany, Orvieto, Assisi, and Rome. It's going to be a fabulous trip. And then in March, Steve Ray and I are doing the Saints and Shrines of Italy. And we're starting all the way up in Milano and then going all the way down to San Giovanni Rotondo for Padre Pio. So that's going to be a crazy, amazing, fantastic trip.
Wow, that's exciting.
And then the Good News Cruise, which is coming up in 2022 in January, is filling up very, very quickly. So if people want to go to, again, the pilgrimage page at Ave Maria Radio or to goodnewscruise.com, that's going to be fantastic, that cruise.
So, T, we know you. Your latest book is Listening for God, and it kind of ties into having epiphany moments. You know, it's similar to that. And we do epiphany moments here on Epiphany, and we like to ask our guests. And you shared the one about the angel at the train station, and I really advise people to get the book. It's a wonderful book, great stories. It'll really prompt you to think about how God is talking to you every day. I really encourage that. And you can get it at our bookstore. It's here at AveMariaRadio.net and on Teresa Tomeo Communications as well, her website. But, T, do you have any other epiphany moment that you want to share? And then we want to get into the Family Fun Fest before we let you go, because we're both going to be there to promote our shows and to meet our listeners. But what epiphany moment you might want to share with our listeners?
Well, I think we were talking about the saints in the program as well. We were talking about Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, and then I was telling you about my love of saints, and you were talking about Blessed Solanus Casey. When I was traveling down recently to speak in New Orleans, I was reading a new book by a friend of mine. It's called Women of Hope, Doctors of the Church, and I love the saints, and I love especially the female doctors of the church. And so I was thinking about, you know, as I was preparing my talk, I had my notes and I was going to do some reading on the plane. And I said, ooh, you know, I forgot to put in that scripture verse about remembering. One of the ways I think we can have hope is to remember what God has done for us. And there are several verses, especially one in the Psalms, that I like to open my talks with, to remember what the Lord has done. And my point of that for that particular presentation I was giving last week was, when we look at all the problems in the church, we look at all the crises we're experiencing, to remember what the Lord has done with the church and with the saints throughout the centuries, that this is not the first rodeo, God's first rodeo, the church's first rodeo, okay, or the first rodeo of the saints. So I make a note to myself, and I jot down that, you know, I'm on my binder. And so all of a sudden after that, I say, okay, good, I'll remember to pull up that verse when I can turn on my computer in the hotel room. So then I grab my friend's book. And remember, I'm thinking about, I want to remind people to remember, to recall what God has done.
Yeah.
So I open the book, V, and the introduction, I've got it right here.
Uh-huh.
And my friend writes, I have often thought that hope is strengthened by remembering.
Wow. Wow.
So right after, before I picked up the book and it opened the cover.
Wow.
I was saying to myself, I need to remind people to remember. Remember what God has done in your life. Remember how when you thought the world was ending and this was the worst situation, turned out to be Romans 8:28, all things work together for good. Turned out for better. You learned from it. You grew from it. God got you through it. If he brings you to it, he's going to see you through it. Remember, remember, remember what the Lord has done. Bada boom, bada bing.
Bing.
There's my moment.
So, T, I want to ask, you've been obviously doing in broadcast media for 30-some years.
40 now, V.
40, wow.
I graduated from, I graduated college in 81, so this is 40.
At 10 years old.
I started when I was 2.
So, T,
I was a child prodigy.
Yeah, you were a child prodigy.
Mamma mia, I'm old.
You were Chatty Cathy.
Oh, Chatty Cathy.
T, so how long have you been on Catholic radio?
It'll be 19 years for Catholic Connection in November. Can you believe that?
That's amazing. That's awesome. And we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of Ave Maria Radio, 27th, 28th, and 29th of August. The details at AveMariaRadio.net. T, what do you like about meeting listeners and engaging with them?
I think it's because people share so much and they trust what's on their heart to you. That's a huge responsibility, but it's also very beautiful about how all of us, whether it's you, me, Al, Dr. Ray, whomever, how this medium in particular, radio, is so personal, V, and how it and because of what we're discussing, the most important relationship that a person can have, that relationship with God, that it's really incredible to be involved in this most important relationship with so many other believers around the country and around the world.
That's amazing. So, again, August 27th, 28th, and 29th, you can find details at AveMariaRadio.net. Many of the hosts that you hear right here on Ave Maria Radio will be at the Family Fun Fest on one of those days or all three of those days. There's various booths, and there's going to be food and a lot of fun things to do with your family. It is the Family Fun Fest. We hope you can make it out there. We love to meet the listeners, and we hope you will come out and meet
us. But you know what, V? I'm feeling kind of left out. I don't know. I have to talk to Mike and Al because they're doing this band, this Ave Maria band. And they never asked me to be a part.
Way I can sing. You could be.
Well, you know what we could do? I was thinking. I forgot to mention in the comments. Yes. So we could be the background dancers.
Oh.
What do you think? We could be like, you know how the Supremes used to have the dance?
I would do
the two of them would dance, right?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think that would be fun.
We both got a lot of rhythm.
He gave me a speaking voice.
And not a singing voice.
Same thing. He gave me a singing voice.
We could be the Ave Maria radio dancers.
That'd be fun. That would be fun. Are they really going to do the band, the Ave Maria band? Oh, that would be so
Notice
fun.
How they didn't ask you or me.
I know. Because I have no talent whatsoever when it comes to music.
Me neither.
I used to play piano for many years from the age of 5 to the age of 12, and then I stopped. And then I started a little bit again when I tried to get Elena to play, and she wasn't having it. This girl's like, give me a basketball, not a piano.
Yeah.
And so she's in a sports gal. So I tried to pick it up again, and I kind of did, but no. I am not musically inclined that way. See, T, we have about a minute or so left with you here on Epiphany. What else do you want to share with our listeners?
I just really hope people, just for the fun of it, even if they can't for whatever reason, go to Italy now to check out the website because it's so much fun. I have videos. I have articles that I've written. The videos are a blast. They're all over Italy and different places in Rome. And I think you'll get a real flavor for the faith and also for the country and how to have fun on a budget. I've got great ideas for how to do this on a budget in Italy. So it's travelitalyexpert.com. Check it out. It'll make you smile.
Thanks, T. Bless you. God bless. Listen to T. Teresa Tomeo, Catholic Connection, heard right here on Ave Maria Radio every morning, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10. Thanks, T, for being with us here in Epiphany.
Thanks, V. Happy 4th.
Happy 4th of July. God bless you and all. And say hi to Deacon Dom.
Will do. Say hi to Ronnie.
I will. And, of course, it is 4th of July. It is our Independence Day. I hope you really think about what that means. We have been dealing with so many issues when it comes to our freedom here in this country, freedom of religion, freedom of press, you know, the way we communicate. We're here, thank God, on Ave Maria Radio because we have the freedom of press. And T and I talk about this all the time, and in the news segment of, you know, that is threatened on a regular basis. We are in a cancel culture. The conservative views are constantly being canceled out on social media, and this is where you hear truth. We pray that we see truth and hear truth so we may be able to speak truth to all of you. And truth, with a capital T, comes from Scripture and the teachings of the Church. And without that, we have nothing to evangelize and share with others. And that's the whole point of this radio station, is that we're evangelizing to you so you can go out and evangelize to other people. And we hope that you go to these websites and all these different resources that Teresa Tomeo talks about all the time and Al Cressa talks about all the time right here on Ave Maria Radio, AveMariaRadio.net. Go to any interview that we've had on any of our shows and share that with other people on your social media platforms. Email your friends and family, whether you have like a group chat on Telegram or WhatsApp. There's great interviews here, and you know, this is how we evangelize the faith, and we hope you do that on a regular basis. And pray for this country on this 4th of July. Pray that we never lose the freedoms that we have in this wonderful country that we call America. And perhaps spend some time really listening for God. Teresa penned that wonderful book with many people contributing, including myself. There are so many different ways you can listen for God's voice, and you can go to adoration. It's one of my favorite ways to take Scripture to adoration and really meditate on maybe one Bible verse or one word. I mean, you know, maybe you heard something during the homily today at Mass, and there's something that really stayed with you. That's another way to really listen for God's voice. That I remember listening to Matthew Kelly at a talk, and he said, spend every Sunday thinking about something that popped out at you during the homily, a message, a word, a phrase, a quote, something that you really feel God speaking to you, and use a journal and write about that. You know, you can go to adoration and just start writing and meditating and praying and thinking about, how is God speaking to me? And it's through those moments that we have those epiphany moments, right? Those aha moments that we talk about here on the show, where you know that God is really sending you a message. It's like, oh, I get it. That light bulb goes off. And so, you know, how can you spend time listening for God? And sometimes maybe, for me, it's a lot in music. I love listening to Christian music. Especially in the car, that's when I talk to God the most. I have all full-blown conversations out with Christ in my car. And the great thing about that is that, you know, when you have Bluetooth, people just think you're talking on the phone. I happen to be talking to Christ. And my daughter kind of jabs me here and there because she sees me talking. She thinks I'm talking to myself. I'm really having conversations with God. And so I think those are really important. You know, when we go into prayer, a lot of times when we pray and we have these God moments, it's full conversations. It's not just, you know, the Our Father, the Hail Mary, or doing the Rosary and the Memorare, and those are all wonderful. Or the prayers to the saints, asking them for intercessory prayer. I've been doing prayers to St. Joseph, the year of St. Joseph, and those are all great. But how do you have those conversations? I mean, that's how you build a friendship with Christ, is having those conversations, just like you would with your friend. Now, he doesn't audibly talk back to you, but he speaks to you in your heart. And when you engage him every single day, those conversations become more frequent and his voice becomes louder. So, you know, how can you have those conversations, not just about your own personal life, but what's going on in the world? We're talking about 4th of July, and I'm personally very concerned about the threats and our freedoms in this country. I am the child of immigrants. I've heard many stories. I know what it's like. Not firsthand, but from the stories of my parents and my aunts and uncles and cousins and grandparents, of what it's like not to live in a free world. And they came from Iraq. Christians were persecuted. The Chaldeans are known as the Church of the Martyrs because it is believed that no other Christianity has died more than Chaldean Christians from Iraq, for the sake of Christ, in the name of Christ. They are martyrs. They have been martyrs. And they've been persecuted from the beginning of Christianity, since St. Thomas the Apostle evangelized and converted them to Christianity, the Chaldeans. And so I know what it's like not to live in the land of the free and the brave, and to have our freedom of religion and our freedom to communicate, to be on this radio station. So I really encourage all of you to pray today and really contemplate what that means. What does Independence Day really mean? And it's great to have the hot dogs and the hamburgers and the barbecues and being at the pool and the beach, and that's all wonderful, and I love being with my family, and I enjoy the holiday weekends. I really love them throughout the whole year. But what does our freedom mean? And pray for the men and women serving in the armed forces, those who have sacrificed their lives for us, for our freedoms, who fought to the death to keep this land free, so we can speak our minds, so we can protest, you know, peacefully protest, I want to add, you know, and so we could, you know, go out there and practice our religion and have this radio station. And think about that. What is God calling you to do when it comes to times of elections and maybe supporting a candidate, supporting our military, helping our veterans? Go and take that in prayer and see what God's putting on your heart, what he might want you to do. I have a devotion to, not really a devotion, but really the veterans are near and dear to my heart. Not that I had a lot of people in my family that served the armed forces, but because I'm so appreciative of what they have done to maintain our freedoms in this country. I love this country for that reason, for our freedom. And I don't want to ever lose that. And I see the threat of that every single day with the cancer culture, with big tech constantly canceling out the voices of those people they oppose. We can't continue down that road in this country, or God knows what will happen. Stay with us, everyone. We're going to continue our conversation here on Epiphany after the break. We're just coming off of Freedom Week, and it's 4th of July when we celebrate our freedoms in this country, which have been threatened in recent years. To talk with us about that is Robert Muse from the American Freedom Law Center. Robert, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to be with you.
It's always great to talk with you. Great conversations with you always. And, you know, Rob, we just came off of Freedom Week. It's 4th of July, the day we celebrate freedoms in this country. But it's so sad and ironic because so much of our freedoms have been threatened, such as freedom of religion and freedom of speech in recent years. And we've seen a lot of that last year when we dealt with COVID and the pandemic and the presidential election, the riots, and with the canceled culture. So let's talk about, you know, our approach to Freedom Week as we just came off of it and how we celebrate 4th of July. What are your thoughts on what's going on in our country as we talk about our freedoms?
Well, first and foremost, the United States of America is the greatest country ever formed. And I really believe that the founding fathers, that the Holy Spirit had inspired them to make this country. And it's no surprise that you have, you know, people all over the world, religious refugees, many of them fleeing to this country for religious freedom and religious liberty. In fact, religious refugees were the founders of this country, and it should come as no surprise that that inalienable right, the right to the free exercise of religion, is enshrined in our First Amendment. And just a little, you know, Constitutional Law 101, the Bill of Rights, which is the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution, the first one being obviously the First Amendment, the right to freedom of speech and the right to religious exercise. These amendments don't, you know, confer rights upon us because our rights are inalienable. They are from our Creator, from God. The genius of our founding fathers is they put these amendments in as breaks on the power of government from interfering with our rights. And again, first and foremost being the right to religious liberty and the right to freedom of speech. And we're seeing, you know, incredible attacks on those. But, you know, one thing I want to point out, you know, religious freedom resides first and foremost in the heart, right? You know, Thomas Aquinas famously said, you know, the first principle of natural law is to seek the good. And we know that the ultimate good is God. So religious freedom, it resides within us. God gave us free will so we could know and love him on our own. And we see even, you know, in these oppressive countries like China, North Korea, and elsewhere, there's this you know, desire for religious freedom and for religious worship continues on despite these oppressive policies. Now, you know, thankfully here in the United States, we have the First Amendment, which is slowly and constantly has been eroded, you know, over the years. And so there are challenges here. But there's some hope here, and I just want to give a little background on the free exercise clause, because this is kind of important, particularly in light of what the Supreme Court just recently did in the Fulton case, dealing with the Catholic Social Services and their refusal to certify same-sex couples as appropriate, you know, parents to be foster parents for, you know, for children that they have in their care. And there was prior to this case, the famous or infamous case, Smith versus Employment Division, which unfortunately was penned by the late Justice Scalia. To me, one of the worst decisions that he ever wrote. But prior to Smith, when the government places any burden on religious exercise, the government had to satisfy strict scrutiny. I mean, they had to have a compelling interest of doing so. It had to be narrowly tailored and the least restrictive means of doing so, which essentially means religious freedom is protected and the government restriction is struck down. Well, Smith changed that formulation. And so if it's what the law describes as a neutral law of general applicability, it can, even if it substantially burdens religious exercise, it's not going to violate the First Amendment. So here's an example. In fact, it was one that Alito used in his concurrence. You know, if Michigan passed a law banning the use of wine, right, some new, you know, prohibition type, you know, statute that was passed, you know, as Catholics, we use wine. It's a central part of the Mass. Well, if this ban on the use of wine applies generally across the board, you don't have a free exercise challenge to it, even though it substantially burdens your religious exercise. Now, if they made an exception and said, well, you can sell wine at restaurants, but you can't, you know, we can't use it for religious exercise, then it's struck down under strict scrutiny. There's a lot of attorneys in the religious field, including myself, who've been constantly trying to get that precedent overturned to go back to what it was prior to that. Interestingly enough, Congress and shortly after this decision in Smith passed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which put in place as a matter of federal statutory law the same religious protection that was in place prior to Smith, but it only applies when the federal government is the actor. So now that's why we see cases like, I'm sure all the listeners are familiar with the Masterpiece Cake Shop and, you know, these other, you know, entities who want to run their business in accord with their religious beliefs, right? We even saw it with, you know, the contraception mandate with Hobby Lobby and so forth. Yeah. Because that was a federal law, we were able to challenge it under federal statutory law, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. But arguably, it's a neutral law of general applicability, so there wasn't even a First Amendment protection. Well, there's certainly efforts to try to overturn Smith to put back in place that the standard that protects religious liberty. There was an effort to do that during the Fulton case, which, and again, you're listening to understand. I mean, the Catholic Social Services, they won 9-0, right? But the problem there was that in Pennsylvania, it wasn't a neutral law of general applicability because they allowed some exceptions, but they wouldn't allow a religious exception. So while they ultimately prevailed, and they prevailed 9-0, even the liberal judges saying, look, this violated religious exercise, as Alito pointed out in his concurrence, because he and Gorsuch and Thomas would have taken that opportunity to overrule Smith and put back in place, you know, greater protection as a matter of First Amendment law for religious freedom. And what the court said was it was an exemption. Well, Pennsylvania could just remove that exemption tomorrow and then they'd be right back at it. Just like Masterpiece Cake, they won because there was such animosity that they targeted their religious beliefs that they prevailed. But, you know, now they're going back after Masterpiece Cake there again. So I'm hoping that over this time with the addition of Amy Coney Barrett and obviously, you know, all the Trump appointees, that there's an opportunity to overturn the Smith decision so that we're not relying on just the state statutes that protect religious freedom, but a federal constitutional amendment, the First Amendment, which broadly protects religious freedom. Because, like, for example, the Equality Act, and I know this is something that the bishops pointed out in this, you know, in the week of religious freedom, the Equality Act, right, it all sounds good. We got to treat people equally. But it also has some serious applications for people who want to exercise their religious beliefs. It deals with all the transgendered issues in ways that would, if you oppose those on religious grounds, you could find your business or yourself in trouble. And what's interesting, Congress, and obviously this is the Democrats, they are going to exempt it as a matter of statutory law from the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And so the Equality Act, when you look at, you know, these kind of federal statutes, now they're going to start exempting them from RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. If we don't have robust protection under the First Amendment, then we're going to be running into problems. People are going to have to make a choice of whether, you know, I have to shut down my business or I have to engage in practices that violate my fundamental religious beliefs. And that's, you know, that's not a choice that you should be put to under our Constitution.
Yeah.
So hopefully there'll be new life breathed into the First Amendment. And trust me, there's a lot of cases that are kind of working their way up. That's one of the issues that is often being presented to the court. And hopefully there'll be the right case that will in fact happen. You know, Coney Barrett, she didn't go along with, you know, the idea of overturning Smith at this point because they had an option, and that option was rely on, you know, even Smith to show that this wasn't a neutral law of general applicability. So they struck down the Pennsylvania case. So if there's a law that comes up where it's, you know, the Equality Act just might very well be it. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody challenges that when it's actually passed, put in place. And somebody's, you know, religious exercise is burdened because of the way they want to run their business or, you know, something that's happening in a public school or so forth, then we can get new life breathed into the First Amendment free exercise provision.
Yeah, that'll be good, too. Let me ask you this, Robert, because we're celebrating 4th of July, and in recent years we've had really anti-patriotic movements on the national level in a very public stage with people taking to the knee or not doing the Pledge of Allegiance, not standing, not singing the national anthem. Recently, there was a reporter, Fox Nation host, pulled no punches responding to a U.S. athlete, Gwen Berry, on this past week after she turned her back on the American flag and protested the national anthem during the U.S. track and field trials just the day earlier. And she kind of just said, you know, this is from the host. She said, not everything resolves around these crybaby athletes. When you compete for a team, USA, it's really not too much to ask that you show a little class and decency. And the athlete responded saying, well, I was set up and I was on the stage and I didn't know they were going to play the national anthem. I don't know why she wouldn't know that, you know, because they play the national anthem at all these games and the pre-games too. And she basically, the reporter came back and said and asked an important question. If you don't believe in this country, why are you playing and representing the country on the nationals? Why are you representing the country in this sport if you don't believe in this country? We have patriotism is really being threatened today. I mean, this is the greatest country in the world, and you may not agree with everything that has happened, but to turn your back on the flag and the national anthem, to take a knee, whatever, you know, and people are going to call me not politically correct, and I'm not taking an issue against any ethnic group or race, but this is the greatest country. What is your take on what's happening in the country today when these things happen on the athletic stages?
Oh, it drives me crazy to say the least. You know, having served on active duty in the Marine Corps for 13 years and served alongside, you know, many people who are willing to give their lives for that, you know, to defend that flag. Now, look, you have a First Amendment right to protest, and I'll defend, you know, anybody's First Amendment right to protest. But you don't have any right to be on a USA team representing the United States of America. I think the Olympic Committee, the USA Olympic Committee, should get rid of those people. Just like, you know, everybody's saying with the football players kneeling before a game. You don't have a First Amendment right to kneel before the game. You're working as a, you know, as a private individual for a private entity, the NFL. This isn't a question of you having a constitutional right vis-a-vis the government. You want to go out on the public sidewalk, you can do it. But it really drives me crazy when I see these pampered athletes, right, who will certainly, you know, take their paychecks and everything else. Oh, and by the way, so many of them have shoe contracts with, you know, companies that make products in China and everything else. Talk about human rights violations. This is a great country. We should respect the flag. We should respect our heritage and our history. And it's a great heritage. It's a great history. There's a reason why, you know, countless numbers of people are trying to flee to our country.
Yeah.
Because it is a great country that represents freedom. And when you have these pampered athletes who have the privilege of being able to compete for the United States of America and they wear USA on their jersey, they ought to respect that. They ought to respect the team that they're playing for, which is the United States of America. And if they don't, kick them off the team. They have no business being there.
Yeah, it's offensive. It really is. And, you know, I'm with you. You have a right to protest, and thank God we have that right in this country to speak our mind and speak truth. I remember, you know, my parents are from the Middle East. They emigrated here from Iraq, okay, and they came here, like many immigrants, for a better life, for freedom, freedom of religion, because they didn't have the right to practice their freedom of religion in that country. You know, they were persecuted. You're a minority as a Christian. In fact, there's a reason that Chaldeans are called our church is called the Church of the Martyrs, because it's believed that no other Christian sect has been killed more in the name of Jesus Christ than Chaldeans, than the Christians from Iraq. And I remember years ago when my aunt, who never emigrated here, my mom's oldest sister, came to visit, and I was making a comment about how something I didn't agree that George H. Bush was doing, and I was watching I was watching the news, and I said, "Wow, I don't agree with that at all. That's so ridiculous." And I was just saying this out loud. He was giving a press conference, and I was just giving my opinion on something I didn't agree with. And my aunt right away said, "Shh, stop talking." And I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "You can't say that about the president." And I said, "I could say whatever I want about the president. What are you talking about?" And I go, "This is my own home, and I could say this on the public square." She was frightened, and she kept begging my mom to tell me to stop talking. She goes, "They're going to come kill her for speaking like this." And my mom goes, "No, they're not. She can talk like this. She could say what she wants." And that just kind of like shocked me for a second. Rob, I thought, wow, she lives in such fear, you know, because she doesn't have that freedom to speak her mind. I don't have to, even if I voted for president, I don't have to always agree with everything they do. And I could give that opinion. That's what makes this country so great. And we have.
And that's what's under attack.
That issue,
I mean, if you have a particular political view or religious view, you know that's under attack. If you're not quote unquote woke, or, you know, you're not on the right side of the cancel culture, you get shut down or you get fired from your job. Mm-hmm. I mean, just look at the headlines. I mean, you can go, you know, just go do a search on the internet. How many people are, you know, being sort of martyred in their own way because they're making comments that don't go along with what the left culture is, and they shut you down. How many people have been shut down on Facebook and social media?
Yeah.
You know, these big tech companies are controlling thought.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really frightening. You know, the direction that is going on the big tech side, and how, you know, how close they are to the liberal left and shutting down any opposition. I mean, for example, because my colleague and I, we do podcasts. We try to do it once a week. It's about an hour long. In a podcast we did in April, we discussed the evidence that shows that the COVID-19 was leaked from the Wuhan lab, and we got censored by Facebook in their, you know, violating their so-called community standards on the issue with COVID-19. Well, you know, lo and behold, who's more right on the issue of what the evidence is showing with regard to COVID-19? But the fact that they would censor us and take us down, you know, for this. But, you know, we have evidence that these social media companies are working with the administration, with the White House. In fact, we sued Twitter and the Biden administration in federal court in Arizona because they're working together in censoring speech related to the COVID-19. And we represent a doctor who had made posts about COVID-19 and was censored because of that.
You can't even say anything about doctors. Physicians can't even challenge whether the vaccine is good for the body, or, you know, letting their patients make a choice of whether they want to have this vaccine or not. If you don't go along with what their belief system is, that everybody should be vaccinated, then you're canceled out immediately. Now, what's going on in this country is very, very frightening. We all should be scared. It's happened to me. I nearly posed a question early on during the pandemic, Rob, last year, early March, and I showed a clipping from doctors who were challenging Fauci, and they were being interviewed by an ABC network in California. I was attacked by even media members saying, "Oh, you're going to believe some, you know, podunk comment from a reporter from these doctors." And I said, "What are you talking about? This is ABC affiliate interviewing them, and they didn't agree with Fauci. Did somebody make this guy God that we can't challenge him? I mean, we can't challenge this guy who anointed him, the all-sayer about everything. I mean, isn't that what we do as reporters? We challenge authority, we ask questions, we investigate, we get other opinions. Isn't that what we're supposed to do as reporters?" And I couldn't believe how many members of the media were actually challenging me for even questioning these doctors, saying, "What other doctors agree with them? What do you think locally?" I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting with the like Facebook and the other social media. When you look at their community standards, they claim to be relying on the science as explained by the World Health Organization. Well, when the World Health Organization recently came out and said if you're 18 and under, you probably shouldn't get this vaccine because of all the health issues, Facebook and Twitter censored them.
I know.
You can't even make this stuff up. But these are dangerous times. And you pointed out something that's very important, is that we no longer have a free press. And it's not so much that a free press in terms of, the government suppressing speech, which I think they are doing indirectly, in particular with the social media censorship. But the mainstream national media is nothing more than the propaganda arm of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
I mean, it's remarkable how they fail to do their job to investigate and to, and to inform the American people as to what's going on with the government. This administration is getting a total pass on everything, whereas the Trump administration had to constantly be fighting these, false claims that they just keep perpetuating over and over again in the media. And so it's becoming a machine in a way that is that's very dangerous to freedom and to liberty.
Very dangerous. And what do we do about it, Rob? I mean, you're an attorney and you're fighting this in a professional level, but what does the average person do? What voice, what power do we have to fight against this?
Yeah, well, as I tell people this all the time when I've given talks and so forth, is that, small steps matter. Right, your voice needs to be heard, and it can be heard. You need to call your senators and representatives when things like the Equality Act come up, and let them know what your position is. We need to start off with what Dan Bongino calls a parallel economy. Look at these alternatives for social media that aren't censoring speech. Dump the mainstream social media. Dump the Amazon. Get off your Amazon Prime. We need to start supporting the local people. Let your voice be heard. Don't fear that, I'm just one voice out of however, hundreds of millions of people, that my voice won't be heard. If more people take small steps and start, boycotting these sports events where they allow this attack on Americans' freedom and Americans' flag. For example, I know somebody that was worked for a marketing company who worked with the NFL. When they did this, the whole kneeling for the American flag, they got killed. In terms of from a marketing perspective, a large majority of their people viewers are veterans and conservatives, and they lost them, and they got hurt, and so they had to adjust their policies. So these things do matter.
Rob, and I have to.
Your small voice matters.
Yeah, you're right, and I have to just chime in there, and I'll let you go because I know you got to go. But my husband, who is a former high school football player, who, in the 17 years we've been married, have always watched the Super Bowl, because he's a big liked football. He refused to watch it this year, and he goes, "I'm done. I'm not supporting these people. If they don't support our country, respect our country, I'm not going to sit there and give in it and watch these advertisers who advertise on the Super Bowl." He was really upset. And you're right, and it does. That he's one of many. It's just it's not his small voice. He's times that by thousands of people who feel the same way.
Right, and don't be scared to do it, and don't believe that it doesn't have an impact. Right, that's what they want us to believe, is that your voice is so small that it doesn't have an impact. It has an impact, and you need to exercise your First Amendment rights and exercise your right to protest, and let these people know. Businesses, if there are businesses that have policies you don't like, stop shopping there and call them and let them know that you're not going to shop there and why.
Yeah.
If we start doing that and do that more, everybody listening here makes a call, it's going to have an impact and it will have an effect.
Yeah, it's right. You do have power, and you're right, Rob. Call your congressional leaders, call your senators, call your local leaders when things are going wrong in your state. Don't spend money at stores that don't support your values. And if other stores are being challenged, go and support them who support your values and your morals. And don't support any organization or network who fights against the things that you fight. Fight against the things that you believe in as Christians. Rob, thank you so much for joining us here on Epiphany. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Good time with you as well. God bless.
God bless. Happy 4th of July. And, it is our independence. We have the greatest country in the world. I am a child of immigrant parents who came to this country, thank God, for a better life, for freedom. I thank God every single day that my parents came to America, because with my mouth, I'd probably
may not be alive if I still lived in the Middle East or in Iraq, because my voice would have been silenced a long time ago. So it is the 4th of July. It is our independence. I hope you, you know, think about what that means to you. Discern what that means to you. Pray about it. Pray for the men and women who have fought for this country, those who have died for this country. Pray for their souls. Thank them. You know, thank them in prayer for what they did for this country. And pray for those men and women who are still fighting for this country. All the men and women, our veterans, our men and women in the military, our services. You know, we couldn't do this without them. You know, we couldn't have this country without the sacrifice they have made for this country. Our flag means something. The national anthem means something. Our country's not perfect. It's not, but it is the greatest country in the world. You have the freedom to speak out loud. You have a freedom to protest, right, when you don't like things. You have a freedom to practice the religion you believe in. We have the freedom to go to church. I mean, when all the church bombings were happening in Iraq, you know, I kept thinking every time I went to Mass, how lucky I was to be at Mass, not worried, not being worried if the church was going to be bombed. I mean, people were going to Mass, still going to Mass, and they have to go to Mass in Iraq worrying, am I going to die today so I could worship Christ? Am I going to die today so I could take the Eucharist? That's what was happening in the Middle East and all countries all over the world, because they don't have the freedoms we have in this country. And it really saddens me. Yes, it's not perfect. Yeah, things go wrong. Yeah, there's racism and bigotry and hatred all over the world, but we still have the greatest country in America. And instead of fighting against the country and the freedoms that we have, why don't we do something to try to make a difference, to make a difference in those areas that are not going well, that are not right, that are unjust? You know, help to make a difference instead of fighting against the entire country. Why don't you make a difference in those sects of the area of this country that are failing us, like in government and politics and organizations and education? If you see injustice, then speak up. But you don't turn your back on the flag and not sing the national anthem and not do the Pledge of Allegiance because you're mad about certain things happening in the country. I mean, you have a right to protest. Yes, amen. You have a right to protest. We have the greatest country in the world. But to want to represent the country in the Olympics and you don't want to be proud to be an American, why are you representing the country then in that sport? Why are you playing for an American team on a national level, on a professional level, if you don't love and respect this country? I'm not saying everything's perfect. I'm not saying you don't have a right to protest injustice. Of course you do. But to not respect this country and love this country for the freedoms that we have in this country really saddens me. Not to respect the men and women who have lost their lives for the freedoms in this country saddens me. Not to respect the men and women who will fight every single day today to maintain our freedom so we can have the freedom of all the freedoms we have in this country, especially when it comes to freedom of religion and freedom of speech. You know, and the cancel culture should frighten everybody. Just because it's the conservatives that are being canceled out the most, everybody should be frightened about that. Because it's an affront to all of our freedoms. Whether you agree with the people commenting that are being canceled out or not, you should be concerned too. Because it may be them today, it could be you tomorrow. So any time that you see somebody's opinion being canceled out on the national level in social media, and when you see agendas at play in mainstream media, even if you agree with that agenda, that still should frighten you. Because that means our freedoms are being taken away. And everybody, you know, stories in the mainstream media should be about balanced stories, about getting both sides of the story by giving you all the facts so you, as the consumer of that information, can make the best decision for you with all the facts on the table. Our goal every day should be seeking truth. That's my daily prayer. God, let me see truth, hear truth, so let me speak truth every single day. That should be our goal. And that's what the freedom of this country is all about, is speaking and hearing truth and being able to, you know, practice what we believe without the fear of being attacked for it. You're listening to Epiphany. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo. Thank you for all of our guests, Teresa Tamio and Rob Muse, for joining us. And as always, I remind our listeners to connect, to collaborate, and to communicate with your Catholic community. We'll catch you next time here in Epiphany.